You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Becoming a Leader. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on Becoming a Leader by Warren Bennis. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. On Becoming a Leader is based on the assumption that leaders are people who are able to express themselves fully. By this, I mean that they know who they are, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and how to fully deploy their strengths and compensate for their weaknesses. They also know what they want, why they want it, and how to communicate what they want to others in order to gain their cooperation and support. Finally, they know how to achieve their goals. The key to full self-expression is understanding oneself in the world, and the key to understanding is learning from one's own life and experience. Becoming a leader isn't easy, just as becoming a doctor or a poet isn't easy, and those who claim otherwise are fooling themselves. But learning to lead is a lot easier than most of us think it is, because each of us contains the capacity for leadership. At bottom, becoming a leader is synonymous with becoming yourself. It's precisely that simple, and it's also that difficult. So, let's get started. End quote. That is Warren Bennis from On Becoming a Leader. Warren Bennis is one of the world's leading authorities on leadership. This is, as Peter Drucker puts it, his most important book. I initially read this book nearly 20 years ago when I first became a leader. As a 25-year-old founder, CEO, who raised $5 million as part of the dot-com boom of the late 90s, I led a startup that went from 2 to 45 employees in less than 9 months. And then, after hiring the CEO of Adidas to replace me as the young CEO, when the market crashed in 2000, we went from 45-plus employees to 15 employees, as we worked with an investment bank to sell the business to one of our two competitors who had raised 10 times the money we had. My learning curve was nice and steep. I recall enjoying this book back in the day, and I enjoyed reading it again in preparation for Leadership 101. It's packed with big ideas. I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. First big idea, leadership. Let's start with the basics. Quote, leaders come in every size, shape, and disposition. Short, tall, neat, sloppy, young, old, male, and female. Nevertheless, they all seem to share some, if not all, of the following ingredients. The first basic ingredient of leadership is a guiding vision. The leader has a clear idea of what he or she wants to do, professionally and personally, and the strength to persist in the face of setbacks, even failures. Unless you know where you're going and why, you cannot possibly get there. The second basic ingredient of leadership is passion, the underlying passion for the promises of life, combined with a very particular passion for a vocation, a profession, a course of action. The leader loves what he or she does and loves doing it. The next basic ingredient of leadership is integrity. I think there are three essential parts of integrity: self-knowledge, candor, and maturity. Integrity is the basis of trust, which is not as much an ingredient of leadership as it is a product. It is the one quality that cannot be acquired, but must be earned. Two more ingredients of leadership are curiosity and daring. Leaders wonder about everything, want to learn as much as they can, are willing to take risks, experiment, try new things. They do not worry about failure, but embrace errors, knowing they will learn from them. Learning from adversity is another theme that comes up again and again in this book, often with different spins. End quote. That's from chapter number 2, Understanding the Basics. Let's recap the basic ingredients of leadership. First, a guiding vision. Leaders have a clear sense of what they want to create and why. They focus on creating, not complaining. So, what do you want and why? This is what I want. This is why. Next ingredient is passion. Leaders have an underlying passion for the promises of life. That enthusiasm for and celebration of life and their chosen vocation is a key aspect of their ability to lead. So how is your passion for the promises of life? Do you love what you do? If not, check out Purpose 101 and get on track with getting incredibly good at doing what you most love to do in service to the world. Next ingredient, integrity. As we discussed in Thoughts of a Philosophical Fighter Pilot, integrity means to be integrated, not disintegrated, a complete whole. Here's how James Stockdale puts it. He says, integrity is a powerful word that derives from a specific concept. It describes a person who is integrated, blended into a whole, as opposed to a person of many parts, many faces, many disconnects. The word relates to the ancient distinction between living and living well. Contrary to popular thought, a person of integrity is typically easygoing, with a sense of humor. He knows himself, reflects a definite and thoughtful set of preferences and aspirations, and is thus reliable. Knowing he is whole, he is not preoccupied with riding the crest of continual anxiety, but is free to ride the crest of delight with life. Note there, integrity leads us right back to passion, a delight with life slash passion for the promises of life. Being out of integrity or disintegration does not. Next ingredient is trust. Trust, as Bennett shares, is the only ingredient that is not acquired but earned. Without trust, a leader cannot function. We earn this trust via our integrity to our vision and consistent respect for truth and the individuals with whom we're serving. More on that in a moment. And then finally, we have curiosity plus daring. Leaders are learners. They are intensely curious and see life as a laboratory in which they can experiment and optimize. They embrace risks, knowing they either win or they learn. How's your passion for learning and your appetite for risk? Check in on that. And as you do so, here's a little PS. Later in the book, Bennis outlines the qualities the next generation leaders will have, which include broad education, boundless curiosity, boundless enthusiasm, contagious optimism, belief in people and teamwork, willingness to take risks, devotion to long-term growth rather than short-term profit, commitment to excellence, adaptive capacity, empathy, authenticity, integrity, and vision. Let's cultivate those qualities, eh? Next big idea, self-invention equals the key to leadership. Quote, I cannot stress too much the need for self-invention. To be authentic is literally to be your own author. The words derive from the same Greek root. To discover your own native energies and desires, and then to find your own way of acting on them. When you've done that, you are not existing simply in order to live up to an image formed by the culture or by some other authority or by a family tradition. When you write your own life, then no matter what happens, you have played the game that was natural for you to play. It is your task to break out of such limits and live up to your potential, to keep the covenant with your youthful dreams. End quote. So, did you know the word authentic literally means to be the author of our own lives? To be effective leaders, we must do the work to create a guiding vision of what we truly want to create with this one precious life of ours. We must passionately fall in love with the promises of life and our chosen path to making our vision a reality, while living in integrity with our deepest values and earning trust along the way as we push our edges, take some risks, and learn just how to go about making it all come together. That is the essence of leadership. And it starts with self-invention, being willing to sit down and write the story of our own lives the way we think is best. How are you doing with that? Reminds me of Abraham Maslow. In Tortoise Psychology of Being, he tells us, quote, the group of thinkers who have been working with self-actualization, with self, with authentic humanness, etc., have pretty firmly established their case that man has a tendency to realize himself. By implication, he is exhorted to be true to his own nature, to trust himself, to be authentic, spontaneous, honestly expressive, to look for the sources of his action in his own deeper nature. Todd Henry echoes this in Louder Than Words, in which he helps us discover our authentic voice. He says, quote, here's a question worth pondering. While your work speaks about you, does it really speak for you? Does it represent you well? Does it reflect the authentic you? Plus, he says, your authentic voice is a gift. How will you offer it to others today through your work? Answering that question is your life's mission. Matthew Kelly has some similar wisdom in his great book, Perfectly Yourself, where he tells us, quote, listen as I whisper three of the most powerful words in history into your ear. The great artists and scientists know the power of these words. Allow these three words to permeate every corner of your being and every aspect of your life, and you will live a life of such authenticity that has rarely been witnessed. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Which parts of your life are confusing, congested, or cluttered? Simplicity is the way to clarity. By the way, Matthew tells us, quote, "We complicate our lives because we don't know what we want." Remember ingredient number one for leadership? A guiding vision. We must know what we want. So, what do you really want? And how can you simplify your life so you can focus on what truly matters to you? And, of course, is now a good time to take a plus 1% baby step? Next big idea. Leaders trust their blessed impulse. Do you? Quote, "A part of whole brain thinking includes learning to trust what Emerson called the blessed impulse, the hunch, the vision that shows you in a flash the absolutely right thing to do. Everyone has these visions. Leaders learn to trust them." I want to remind you here of something Norman Lear said regarding the profound influence that Emerson's self-reliance had on his growth as a leader. Emerson talks about listening to that inner voice and going with it, all voices to the contrary. "I don't know when I started to understand that there was something divine about that inner voice. I certainly didn't in high school, college, or even in young manhood. But somewhere along the line, I appreciated that too. How is it possible that as a writer, I can go to bed 1,000 times with a second act problem and wake up with the answer? Some inner voice. To go with that, which I confess I don't do all the time, is the purest, truest thing we have. And when we forego our own thoughts and opinions, they end up coming back to us from the mouths of others. They come back with an alien majesty. So the lesson is, you believe it. When I've been most effective, I've followed that inner voice." Following the blessed impulse is, I think, basic to leadership. This is how guiding visions are made real. End quote. That's from a chapter called Operating on Instinct, in which we learn to deepen trust in ourselves. There are few greater resources to help us do that than Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay manifesto, Self-Reliance. If you haven't read that yet, please do. You'll love it. Here are a few of my favorite gems for your inspiration. Emerson tells us, trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. He says, if I have lost confidence in myself, I have the universe against me. What I must do is all that concerns me, not what the people think. This rule, equally arduous in actual and in intellectual life, may serve for the whole distinction between greatness and meanness. Thank you, Ralph. We must trust ourselves. We must have the strength to rely on what we believe to be true. And, Emerson tells us, we must also know that having this trust in ourselves is not easy. Having the self-reliance to trust ourselves to not conform is a courageous, heroic act. Emerson warns us, quote, "For nonconformity, the world whips you with its displeasure." Plus, he says, "And truly, it demands something godlike in him who cast off the common motives of humanity and ventured to trust himself for a taskmaster." And all that leads to one of the best passages ever. Emerson tells us, quote, "A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, adored by little statesmen and philosophers and divines. With consistency, a great soul has simply nothing to do. He may as well concern himself with his shadow on the wall. Speak what you think now in hard words, and tomorrow, speak what tomorrow thinks in hard words again, though it contradict everything you said today. Ah, so you shall be sure to be misunderstood. Is it so bad, then, to be misunderstood? Pythagoras was misunderstood, and Socrates, and Jesus, and Luther, and Copernicus, and Galileo, and Newton, and every pure and wise spirit that ever took flesh. To be great is to be misunderstood." End quote. Leaders trust their blessed impulse. Do you? And most importantly, what is your blessed impulse whispering or perhaps shouting in your ear right this moment? Little PS here, I'm reminded of a time a billionaire who invested in my prior business recited that long Emerson quote from memory as we discussed making a shift in our biz. Apparently, he thought it was wise advice. I'm also reminded of a mentor, the former CEO of Adidas, telling me the two rules of business as he saw it. One, business is simple, keep it that way. And two, trust yourself, always. Which leads us to our next big idea, expressing yourself versus proving yourself. Quote, some people are born knowing what they want to do and even how to do it. The rest of us aren't so lucky. We have to spend some time figuring out what to do with our lives. Vague goals such as I just want to be happy, or I want to live well, or I want to make the world a better place, or even I want to be very, very rich are nearly useless. What do you want? The majority of us go through life, often very successfully, without ever asking, much less answering, this most basic question. The most basic answer, of course, is that you want to express yourself fully. For that is the most basic human drive. As one friend put it, we all want to learn how to use our own voices, and it has led some of us to the peak and some of us to the depths. How can you best express you? End quote. That's from a chapter called Deploying Yourself, Strike Hard, Try Everything. Yes, we're repeating ourselves with our emphasis on knowing what you want. Fact is, you can't deploy yourself and strike hard unless you know yourself and have a clear target at which you're aimed. So again, what do you want? Note, one of the key distinctions Bennis makes throughout the book is that we want to be driven to express ourselves, not to prove ourselves. There's a big difference between those. When our deepest commitment is to express ourselves, we can trust those blessed impulses and ignore the inevitable backlash that will arise from our nonconformity. If our primary drive is to prove ourselves, we're in for a very tough haul, because we'll need to constantly conform to prove we're awesome and impress others, and in the process, sell our souls. Know yourself, deploy yourself, strike hard, try everything, lead. Which leads us to our next big idea, trust. Four ingredients to generating plus sustaining it. Quote, the underlying issue in leading from voice is trust. In fact, I believe that trust is the underlying issue in not only getting people on your side, but having them stay there. There are four ingredients leaders have that generate and sustain trust. One, constancy. Whatever surprises leaders themselves may face, they don't create any for the group. Leaders are all of a piece. They stay the course. Two, congruity. Leaders walk their talk. In true leaders, there is no gap between the theories they espouse and the life they practice. Three, reliability. Leaders are there when it counts. They are ready to support their coworkers in the moments that matter. Four, integrity. Leaders honor their commitments and promises. When those four factors are in place, people will be on your side. Again, these are the kinds of things that can't be taught, they can only be learned. End quote. Trust. Recall that it can't be acquired, it must be earned. These are the four ingredients. Constancy plus congruity plus reliability plus integrity. How are you doing with each? Check in on that as we move to the next and final big idea. World-class leaders. Will you be one of them? Quote, becoming a leader is not an orderly path. It is a fitful, often painful process that involves wrong turns and dead ends before great strides are made. Usually, some transformative event or experience is central to finding one's voice, learning how to engage others through shared meaning, and acquiring the other skills of leadership. FDR's lifetime struggle with polio was most certainly his crucible of leadership. Instead of simply enduring hard times, we have to seize every opportunity for transformation they afford. In recent weeks, as the stock market rocked and rolled, I thought of what Abigail Adams had written to John Quincy Adams in the turbulent days of 1780. These are the hard times in which a genius should wish to live. Great necessities call forth great leaders. It is significant, I think, that Adams chose the plural leaders. It is easy to forget that we need more than one gifted leader at a time. As the founding of the United States, when our population was less than 4 million, we had six towering leaders: Washington, Jefferson, Hamilton, Madison, Franklin, and Adams. Now that we number more than 300 million people, we're surely capable of yielding at least 600 world-class leaders in this country alone. Will you be one of them? End quote. Those are the very last words of the book. Imagine that. During our revolution, the United States produced six of history's greatest leaders at a time in which our total population was less than 4 million people. Now, with more than 300 million citizens, we are certainly capable of producing at least 600 truly extraordinary leaders. The important question, will you be one of them? As you contemplate that, let's take a moment to reflect on this gem from Abigail Adams. And note this, Bennis cited her wisdom three times throughout the book, signaling just how important it is to his overall philosophy of leadership. She tells us, "These are the hard times in which a genius should wish to live. Great necessities call forth great leaders." Hard times in which a genius, I'm pointing at you, should wish to live. Great necessities call forth great leaders. Let us be called forth as we each become the leaders we are capable and destined to become. That is a quick look at On Becoming a Leader. Warren Bennis, one of the world's leading thinkers on leadership, is a distinguished professor of business administration at the University of Southern California. He's written over 30 books on leadership. And if you enjoyed this note, I think you'll also enjoy the notes on selected writings of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Louder Than Words, Perfectly Yourself, Originals, The Power of Ideals, A Joseph Campbell Companion, Mastery by George Leonard, and Creativity by Csikszentmihalyi, all of which are linked in the note. Now, for some great quotes. Back to Abigail Adams, who tells us, "It is not in the still calm of life or the repose of a Pacific station that great characters are formed. The habits of a vigorous mind are formed in contending with difficulty. Great necessities call out great virtues." Warren Bennis tells us, "Ernest Hemingway said that the world breaks all of us, and we grow stronger in the broken places. That's certainly true of leaders. Their capability to rebound permits them to achieve, to realize their vision." Bennis tells us, "Ideologically charged approaches rarely solve complex problems. Great leaders do not try to impose an ideological template, right or left leaning, on problems. First-rate leaders know that every problem is thorny in its own way, and inclusively and collaboratively find solutions that reflect the unique realities at hand." Bennis also tells us, "To become a leader, then, you must become yourself. Become the maker of your own life." Norman Lear tells us, "Short-term thinking is the societal disease of our time." Back to Bennis, who tells us, "As John Gardner once said, talent is one thing, while its triumphant expression is another. Only when we are fully deployed are we capable of that triumphant expression. Full deployment, engagement, hone and sharpen all of one's gifts, and ensure that one will be an original, not a copy." James Madison tells us, "The public good, the real welfare of the great body of people, is the supreme object to be pursued." Back to Bennis, who tells us, "Knowing yourself, then, means separating who you are and who you want to be from what the world thinks you are and wants you to be." Max Dupree says, "The first responsibility of a leader is to define reality. The last is to say thank you. In between, the leader is a servant." And finally, let's come back to Abigail Adams. "These are the hard times in which a genius should wish to live. Great necessities call forth great leaders." Here's to being great leaders and serving as profoundly as we can. I hope you enjoyed. I look forward to sharing more. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.